Hello again, and it's time for another episode of BitNote with David Collins. We'll be playing some great video game music and talking about the games they're from. Hope you enjoy. All right, to start things off, to introduce our show, so to speak, why don't we start with an intro from an actual video game? Now, the music I'm about to play is actually meant to be played alongside this introduction cinematic, which centers around this family all bored in black and white monochrome, and suddenly they see an exciting advertisement on the TV screen. It is the opening of a fantastic amusement park. Surely this is great excitement, and then as if by magic, and in fact it must be magic because there's not really any other way to explain it, the presenter who's presenting this park on TV suddenly appears in their living room and transports them all to this magic theme park that suddenly grows up before their very eyes, and they go on exciting theme tunes and ride all these parks and ride all these amusement rides and everything. And so happy days are returned, and with that we are introduced to the game Theme Park. And that's the intro music to Theme Park, developed by Bullfrog Productions. And the music there was composed by Russell Shaw, who's done a lot of great music work and a lot of other Bullfrog Productions video games. Theme Park is pretty straightforward. I think I've actually introduced this sort of concept on previous shows. I had a Roller Coaster Tycoon, in which people had to actually build an entire amusement park and detailed rides and everything. And on another show, I also played the music from Theme Hospital, where you had to build an entire hospital and make sure that all the patients were looked after and everything was okay. Well, Theme Park comes before Theme Hospital. In fact, it basically took place before both of those games, and since Theme Hospital was also made by Bullfrog Productions, that's why they've both got similar names, although Roller Coaster Tycoon was made by a completely different guy altogether. Theme Park is basically, as I said, you have to build a park. It's very cartoony, a lot of fun, You've got a small amount of money. So the first thing you've got to do is you've got your plot of land, you build the roads, you build a couple of basic attractions that you can. And when you've, you know, a few things like a coffee shop, which is shaped like a coffee thing, and a whole load of like little stalls that are meant to sell incredibly sweet and incredibly unhealthy food to all the young kids that are going to arrive. And then when you've done all that and you've devoted maybe a bit of money to researching new rides, you open up the park, and then busloads of people come. And whether they come in, they check out the rides, they eat at your stalls, they try some of the rides, and then they leave. And the question whether more busloads of people come will pretty much depend on the reactions of the first busload of people as well. Do they like the rides? Do they get sick? Do they have a good time, or do they not have a good time? Were they too bored of walking or anything? All these things just have to determine whether people had a great time at their party. And if they didn't at your park, and if they did, they go home and they tell all their friends and family, look at this great awesome park that we were at. And of course then more busloads of people come, and more and more. But of course there are other parks that are you've got to watch out for. So you've got to keep innovating. You've got to keep building new rides. You've got to keep, you know, researching money. You've got to take all the money that you've gained from new admissions and use it to refurbish rides and build new ones. And you've got to hire janitors to keep everything working properly. And you've got to also make sure they clean up the park, because you don't want it to get too littered. You want to make sure you've got bins posted everywhere. It's all just a very strategic and just very fun game where you build all these crazy rides. And when you get to the roller coaster building, you can actually completely determine exactly, you know, where the roller coaster builds and how it turns, if it's got loop the loops and everything. I mean, I've said before, Roller Coaster Tycoon, it came out later, and I mean that was far more accurate when it came to like measuring the actual roller coaster attributes. It would literally allow you to test out the roller coaster before it made, and then it would give you a report of all the g-forces and sharp turns and everything that was experienced by the carts. But Theme Park, which came before that, was far more of a cartoony game. It was about just having fun. It wasn't getting too technical with the roller coaster. Although Roller Coaster Tycoon was a pretty awesome game in and of itself, the two games have just got different styles with how it goes about park management. And I mean, like I said, Theme Park came first, so they were kind of like opening up the whole area. And it's also another fun thing about it is that with Theme Park, you can actually preview a couple of the rides as if you're taking it yourself. It basically just plays this really neat little movie where you basically adopt the first person perspective of someone going through the rides and everything. I was really excited about this part, but then it turned out, like, if you make a really plain roller coaster and then make another roller coaster that's got lots of loops and turns and everything, and you try to test out both rides, it kind of plays the same video for both rides. So I was kind of going, oh damn it, when I built this roller coaster, I wanted to see the whole thing from my first person perspective in the whole park. But nah, I mean, the technology just wasn't there at the time. It was 1994. All the rides were really, the game was basically 2D overlay. You had the whole map in front of you, drew out the parks, the queue lines and everything. But when you test out the rides, they just showed a pre-rendered 3D video clip. And the pre-rendered 3D was kind of fun at the time. It's back then, it was just a lot of simple shapes and just simple textures and everything. And we look back on it now and go, but you know, at the time it was just really funny. It was just great to have this excitement. The only thing that irritated me about the time was, you know, I wanted it to change. And once you've rendered a 3D movie in a video game, it's cemented like that. Nothing you do in gameplay can change. But thankfully, a lot of video games fix that. 3D, all the 3D, instead of having it like a puppet show that was pre-recorded and put onto your video game, now it's like a puppet show that's animated real-time in the video game. And this can lead to a lot of fun stuff. For instance, I've seen more than one video game where you can, where the cutscene, you know, when it's actually a movie part and your characters are going through all the motions and following a script and whatever, they might wear or show injuries that are, you may have equipped them with a coat or a jacket or something like in the previous scene, and they'll be wearing it during this cutscene. So it's kind of funny when that sort of thing happens as well. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It of course was Bullfrog Productions, which is Peter Molyneux, and boy, that guy's got a whole history. He revolutionized so many aspects of video games, especially in the 90s. And Theme Park, with one of its first emphases on top-down, you know, simulation and, you know, building an entire world. It was like that. Of course, in all fairness, the true genesis of that probably goes further back to SimCity, but Theme Park definitely had its influence. All right, I think it's time to move on to an earlier game, actually, because if you've listened to this show at all, you will know that just to recap, intro, that was the intro by Russell Shaw from Theme Park by Bullfrog Productions. Great game. So, as I said, I'm actually going to play a theme from a game that came earlier than that. It was also sort of like a main menu theme, although this is just plainly done. It's actually kind of funny. With Theme Park, they played this whole music over an intro that was great big cinematic. But the intro I'm about to play right now was played over simple text appearing on the screen explaining the story of the game. The game didn't really have much story, but really that's just how it was back then. Technology really determined how well the story could be depicted in the game. These days we've got full CG. You could basically, if you wanted to, just record live action video. But even not that, you could come up with an animated 3D video clip that would rival some low production thing you'd see in the movies. But I'm getting kind of off track at this stage. Let's just play the music. And that was from Speedball 2 by the Bitmap Brothers. The actual music was composed by Nation 12, who actually included, at the time, Simon Rogers. Simon Rogers has been a major English composer, worked on a lot of TV themes, and has had chart successes. And I believe in the early 90s, he was involved in a couple of acid house bands, which I think included Nation 12. It's kind of funny, the game's title credits actually only mention Nation 12, so it was kind of on my own research that I figured out that Simon was involved. But essentially, at the time, he was interested in a lot of acid house music, and apparently this Nation 12 was a band, and either he was in it or a primary member of it, I'm not quite sure, and I'm not even quite sure what acid and house actually means, but apparently that influence is represented in the song you just heard, so hopefully that's enough for you guys to go on if you don't already know more than I do about the subject, which in itself is highly possible. To rewind back, essentially what you've heard was essentially from Speedball 2, Brutal Deluxe. Yeah, it has a subtitle there everyone seems to forget to mention. Essentially, it's normally I don't like sports games. There's many reasons for that. But I think one of the reasons is that, like, if your opponent has the ball and you're controlling a player, you can't walk up to that player, punch them in the face and grab their ball. However, with Speedball 2, you can. This probably is a huge amount of how I like it. Another thing is, in most sports games, you're not able to just grab the ball and hold it in your hand for as long as you damn well desire. But once again, in Speedball 2, you can. You basically have a team of about 7 players. It's kind of like in the future, so everything's shiny and metallic and sci-fi, because, you know, it's like the 90s, early 90s version of the future. And essentially, you're basically racing about, and you grab the ball, and you can throw it across to other of your team members, or you can just try to make it to the goal. And here's another thing, you can actually, while you're holding the ball, you can just run yourself right into the goal. You don't even have to, like, let go of the ball or anything. It's a small little goal at both ends of the pitch, and you just do it. So the game is fun. If you have the ball, your opponents might try to punch you or slide tackle you or just punch you in the face and grab the ball and run off with it yourself, and you can do the same for them. The game also throws in a nice other few little aspects too. For instance, there are loop-the-loops down this on the sides of the I'm not making this up. Actually, there are loop-the-loops down at the sides of the screen, and if you throw the ball up the loop-the-loop so it goes up and around the loop-the-loop, I think you get an extra point or something. I actually never figured out what that loop-the-loop did. There was, like, all these lights that would turn on, so I always assumed it was a worthwhile thing to do, but it was just fun at the whole thing. And as I said, also, it's not an offside. There's no the ball going offside and the game stops while everyone has to get into position or whatever. No, if the entire arena or pitch or whatever is basically solid, is enclosed by solid walls, so if the ball flies off, it just hits the wall and jumps back in, so you grab it and then you punch the next opponent in the face and you keep going. It's a brutal, fun game. It can be played with multiple players. Of course, the computer quickly decides who you control, and if someone grabs the ball on your team, you quickly control them, and it's all just a furious race to try to get the ball into your opponent's team, and it's got none of that, you know, cruft or any sort of confusing things of other games. It's just brutal. It's just grab the ball, smash everything, get it in the opponent thing. And it's also, and like I said, it's also got nice little funny things like portals, for instance. If you throw the portal in on one side of the pitch, it'll suddenly pop out in the other side of the pitch, which is also very nice. Every so often, you furiously tackle someone so badly that they actually suddenly lie down on the back of the pitch, and basically this, like, hovering ambulance comes in with a stretcher and they pick the guy, put him up. And when that happens, you think to yourself, boy, this is, yeah, I really damaged that guy. And of course, it happens to one of your guys, it's not quite as funny. But, you know, that's the nature of the sport, in all fairness. And of course, it's just so much ambience, atmosphere, you hear the crowds, you've got a guy yelling, ice cream, just as he in somewhere off screen of the things, but meanwhile, you're just focused on the action, all that shiny metallic players and all the armor, which you can do a few upgrades during stage with, but generally, you're just racing about the place, throwing balls, hitting people, and just having a lot of fun. As I said earlier, there is a bit of a text intro which describes something about, you know, 2095, the sport is agreed, and then it goes underground, and like something by 2100 the sport is resurrected. It's really, really basic stuff. Like I said, not much story in these sort of games. But I remember when I was a kid and playing this game, I think my young mind couldn't quite handle the concept of science fiction. So I was looking at all these dates popping up in the events, and I turned to my brother and said, you know, how exactly do the game developers know that all this sort of stuff is going to happen? Yeah, sort of quite figured out the meaning of science fiction, but, you know, excuse me, I was a kid at the time. I believe that this game was like one of those games that like is a classic hit, and then a couple of times people try to revive it afterwards, but I don't think that any version of Speedball was more successful than Speedball 2, the one from the music which I just played right now. It's kind of funny. Sometimes game development is a bit of a science, you know, its aspects, but other times it's more alchemy or just creative spark, really. I mean, you can if you copy the rules of a game perfectly, then you'll pretty much have the same game. But if you want to improve the rules, you're never quite sure what to do. It's what I'm saying is it's hard for sometimes lightning to strike twice, and that even though the Speed World 2 is a really awesome game, a lot of it's not just for what it is. It's also the little touches, the little things. It's how everything comes together, how the game is crafted, how all the little things coming together and all the big things as well with the underlying mechanics. It's just a great game. So it's kind of sad that it hasn't really been resurrected that well, but it's just hard. It's hard to make a fun game, and even if you're basing it off a game that's already fun, it's still a challenge. So I think it's time we move on to the last game of the show. This is from Professor Layton and Pandora's Box. Or, apparently, if you're in America, Professor Layton and the Diabolical Box. Why they actually changed that, I have no idea, but I'm assuming it's got something to do with the whole Philosopher's Stone, Sorcerer's Stone fiasco from the first Harry Potter book, wherein the fact Americans seem, at least perceived to be, extremely behind in basic mythology knowledge. So in any event, this is, of course, a sequel to Professor Layton and the Curious Village, and it's very similar in a lot of ways. You are Professor Layton, you have your assistant, or at least he claims your assistant. I think the truth is, seems to be hinted that basically, you know, you're his legal guardian or custodian or whatever, and you're just saying, okay, you can be my assistant to placate him. And essentially, you're on the trail of a mysterious box that is said to kill whoever opens it. But of course, this is solved in the way everyone knows how: puzzles. Lots and lots of puzzles. This isn't like a lot of game where it's like a puzzle game and everything's intertwined. This is a case where each puzzle will like basically have a number assigned to it, and you can basically solve each puzzle in its own isolation. And there are a lot of fun puzzles. They've obviously they went through a heck of a lot through the first game, and now they've gone through a few more. One of these puzzles is actually very, very clever. You see, when you get the game box, you open up and you find this train ticket. And when you play the game, you find out that the characters get an identical train ticket. And then one of those puzzles relies on you being able to use the train ticket you've got to figure out the answer. So it's kind of very clever to use out-of-the-box materials. I heard a lot of early games like Zork, for instance, use plenty of these out-of-the-box materials to solve in-game puzzles. But it's still nice to do something like this whenever it happens. Other puzzles are not so good. There's, for instance, Knight's Tour, which is always a tricky one, which I learned a bit when I was doing computer programming, where you basically have a knight on a chessboard and you have to move it around, lining on one square once. That's frustrating. And then, of course, Peg Solitaire. I remember playing this version in an aunt's house, and honestly, it's just always frustrating. But I mean, like, the point is, the game has a lot of couple of different variants of each of these games. Some are easy, some are hard. But throughout the game, you basically come across a wide variety of puzzles, not just the ones I just mentioned, and try to get it through to solve enough of them to complete the game. And thankfully, and one of the great things about this game to make it easier for everyone is that not only do you usually get a bunch of hints for each puzzle, but also you don't need to solve every single puzzle in the game. If you have to solve a puzzle in the game, it's usually a fairly easy one. But for most of the puzzles, you just need to solve a substantial enough portion of the puzzles to get through the game to win. As always, you've got a nice whimsical storyline, although this one has a couple of weird twists in it. You've got great characters of Professor Layton and Luke, his apprentice, or so-called apprentice, and you've got some great animation that's pretty much professional quality stuff, although we only get to see bits of it here and there, but only any major event we get a nice little animated sequence. And to top it all off, the game ends on a slightly emotional note. I mean, it's hard to describe without going too much in, but it's throughout the game you're just going through a lot of puzzles and trying to figure out what happens, and then suddenly the end resolves, the solution comes, and you realize it's actually kind of beautiful. I'm playing the ending theme now. Its actual name is Iris. It was composed by Tomohito Nishiura, and there's a song version by Salua, which I'm not going to play right now. I just think it's beautiful because every so often there's a video game theme that really catches beauty and emotion and sums it all up, and I think this is one of those songs. It is, of course, from Professor Layton and Pandora's Box by Level 5. This has been David Collins with BitNote. I hope you've enjoyed yourself listening to these songs, and thank you for listening.